Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that sees a light at the end of the pandemic tunnel, although we're still being careful while out in public, especially in movie theaters. We sat in the cool dark last week for one film, the Marvel Studios study, Black Widow, while we caught a second film, the Danish production Writers of Justice, in the comfort of our own homes, courtesy of Amazon Prime. Let's begin this week's show by exploring the origins of a member of the Avengers who, unlike some of her colleagues, doesn't have actual superpowers, but she does have some great poses. That character carries the proper name of Natasha Romanoff, and she's played by Scarlett Johansson. Don't be confused, though. Natasha did actually die in the 2019 Avengers production Avengers Endgame. So this film, directed by Australian filmmaker Kate Shortland, takes us back, obviously, before that, to when, on the run following the events of 2016's Captain America Civil War, Natasha is hiding out in Norway. Pretty soon, though, she's recruited for a mission that will provide her the opportunity both to finish off an old enemy she thought already dead and to reconnect with the faux family she once lived with in, of all places, Ohio. That family consists of Dad, Alexei, a.k.a. the Red Guardian, played by David Harbour, Mom, Melina, played by Rachel Weisz, and Sister Yelena, played by Florence Pugh. The plot becomes far more complex, and it involves a cast of characters played by such actors as William Hurt, Olga Kurylenko, and Ray Winston at his snarling best. It's also rampant with the obligatory CGI-enhanced bangs and booms and jujitsu fight scenes. But the best part of the film, which ranks it arguably among the better of the Avengers series, is the family stuff, which is both self-aware about domestic dysfunction and self-deprecating in how it realizes the limitations of superhero movies that get just a tad too serious about their social messaging.
Black Widow has always been my favorite Marvel character because, Dan, you point out or mention that she doesn't have superpowers. But yes, she does have superpowers. They just aren't the fake kind of superpowers that exist throughout the genre in every other manifestation.
Yeah, like Doctor Strange's magic.
All of them. All of them. Crazy. So this is a superhero movie for people who do not like traditional superhero movies, such as myself. I like this movie because there are three strong women protagonists. I also like this movie because there, although it's a prequel, automatically it's violating some people's notion of how these things should play out. You really don't need a whole lot of backstory to understand about the Avengers, to understand or appreciate what's going on here. It's perfectly fine that you know that the Avengers in some various fashion exist in the world, and then you're good to go. I like the fact that it takes place in some exotic locales, Cuba, Budapest. I also like the focus on characters, and I like the focus on this story about the family, because who doesn't like to watch stories about families, especially those that are, you know, troubled or whatever? And again,
or the ones in the Fast and Furious movies where they're talking about family all the time.
Okay, there is that. Yeah. They have a different conception of family.
Sure.
But this movie tells us the sort of origin story of Black Widow and her fake family comprised of Russian spies who live in Ohio, yes, shades of the Americans. And it also introduces a new character, Yelena, played by Florence Pugh, who some of you might recognize from her relatively recent star turn in Greta Gerwig's Little Women. And she, I think, burst on the scene initially in the Lady Macbeth, which was not a retelling of the Shakespearean tale, but rather something else. And I thought that she really brought something special to this particular incarnation of the Black Widow story. And I'm sure that they're teeing her up to be the successor to what happens next, now that Scarlett Johansson has announced that she's probably finished with the whole Marvel universe, and she's supposedly pregnant. So, hey, woohoo. I think that the other two characters that we have not mentioned are played by Rachel Weisz and also by David Harbour. And they, too, vacillate back and forth between this kind of self-deprecation about their own circumstances and their own abilities And this
and
sort
frailties.
Of, right. And this sort of earnest approach to trying to do the right thing. I would say that sometimes the messages, if there are such things in these films, kind of seem a little maybe over the top or antiquated. But all in all, this is by far my favorite Avengers movie, because it's not really an Avengers movie. Superhero movie, because it's not really a superhero movie. And so I'm just going to leave it to you guys to critique the film, critique my perspective on it, or just blather away about how great superhero movies are, even though the Konya Shenti know differently.
I don't think I'm going to do any of those things, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Because, I mean, yeah, if this is your favorite, it's your favorite. This is not amongst my favorite of the Marvel movies. And I mean, I'm just sort of Marvel fatigue anyway, and I haven't watched any of the TV series spinoffs that have come out. This whole last year where I didn't have to watch any Marvel movies, I didn't miss them so much, even though I enjoy them most of the time. They're like really good, to quote our friend Martin Scorsese, they're really good theme park attractions, basically. And occasionally you get one that rises above the pack, where you get a Black Panther or a Guardians of the Galaxy. This, I think, I agree with you in regards to Black Widow, that the characters are the strongest thing here, or rather, the actors are the strongest thing, because I don't know how complex the characters really are. But that's okay. I mean, they're comic book characters. The actors here bring a lot. I appreciate the fact that Scarlett Johansson, having done this role so many times, is kind of willing to step back and let the other actors kind of take over and steal all the scenes. Florence Pugh is great, of course, and I really liked her both in Little Women and Midsommar.
Midsommar, yes.
I wasn't crazy about the movie so much. She's great in that. And God bless David Harbour. I mean, he is, to me, like the star of the show here, because he's so self-deprecating, he's so funny, and yet he's kind of believable as this sort of fallen superhero.
That's right, and people will remember him. He was in the movie we reviewed last week, Steven Soderbergh's No Sudden
Move. Right.
So,
that's right.
I mean, he goes from that to this. It's an amazing the range this guy
and
has.
And it's also sort of a revival for him in terms of these sorts of movies, because he was the title character in that horrible Hellboy reboot that they did. Even though he was perfectly fine in that role, the material let him down.
So, and my grandchildren know him from Stranger Things.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And so it's good to see him kind of play this kind of role. I wouldn't mind if he came back again. And Rachel Weisz, of course, can do no wrong. My problem with Black Widow, though, is really the action scenes. I don't think there's anything here that is all that impressive or stellar. In fact, I thought the early action scenes were almost visually incomprehensible in a way that I don't recall from a lot of the other Marvel movies. Of course, I haven't seen a Marvel property in more than a year, so maybe they've always been like this and I just forgot. But the editing was too frenetic. Some of the camera angles they chose were odd, so I wasn't sure, like the spatial relationships between people. I was kind of confused by that. And the visuals were really dark a lot of the time. When it does become more of a family drama or a family sitcom, it really works a lot better. And I almost kind of wish that was the whole movie. But of course, you have to have the big slam bang action scenes. I just felt like I'd been there before. So yeah, I think this is sort of mid-tier Marvel, even if it has some really A-plus performances in there. Performances that maybe are better than the movie deserve, in a way.
So you mentioned that you felt as though you'd been there before. Mm-hmm. How does that differ from other superhero movies? Because I always feel that way. And you mentioned two excellent superhero movies, Black Panther and, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
But to me, it's all about that repetition, and that's what's comfortable to people.
Yeah, I think that's why these movies are so popular, is you know what you're going to get when you drop down your $20 for the IMAX ticket. That's sort of like the secret sauce here, is that it's not secret at all.
Yeah, see, so I'm somewhere in between both of you, because to me, what makes these movies work is not the action. I mean, I got over that a long time ago when I first realized, ooh, CGI can do wonders. Yeah, okay, yeah, what next? Mm-hmm. And so I found myself agreeing with you, Nathan, that much of the action in this film is like, ho-hum, ho-hum, can we get through this and get back to Florence Pugh, Yelena, making snarky remarks about Natasha's posing when she falls down and, you know, doing a yoga pose, and then her doing the same thing, or Red Guardian talking about, oh, does Captain America remember me? You know, we are kind of equals.
Great accent work there.
Thank you. I love that kind of stuff. That is what kept me going through the entire film, and I'm not so sure people need to wait for through the credit sequence, and then they'll see that there is a sequel in the works, whether it works
out or not. Or a prequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A prequel sequel, yeah, exactly.
Or maybe it'll be like Godfather 2, where it's both a prequel and a sequel at the same time.
But whether they can continue the energy here, I don't know. But I agree with Mary Pat. I thought this was one of the better of the Avenger films. But all the ones you've mentioned, Black Panther, Guardians of the Galaxy, to me, the key strength in all those is the characterization. Chris Pratt in Guardians of the Galaxy, Chadwick Boseman in Black Panther.
But to push back on what you said about the action scenes, I think both of those movies, for instance, and even the very first Avengers movie, the action sequences in those are fun and inventive and come up with new ways of framing this sort of thing. So I don't think it's just the characters. I think you have to have the action component there as well to be a really great Marvel movie.
Yeah, the faker the better. Woohoo!
And that was our discussion of Black Widow. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Writers of Justice. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Warning. This message contains dangerously high levels of gratitude, known to result in feeling appreciated, with an increased risk of happiness. Please consult your doctor for a smile lasting longer than 4 hours. Thank you to our members, grantors, and program underwriters.
So forget your troubles and wear a smile.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I discussed the Marvel Studios blockbuster Black Widow. Let's now move to the Danish language film Writers of Justice. Among the most prominent Danish filmmakers is Anders Thomas Jensen, both as a writer and as a director in his own right. It should come as no surprise, then, that Jensen's latest effort is a film that stars some of his home country's most prominent actors. Mads Mikkelsen stars as Marcus, a Danish soldier who is called home when his wife and daughter are caught in a train accident that kills the wife and leaves the daughter unhurt, physically but emotionally bereft. He, though, is no real comfort, the loss only compounding his already sullen mental state, likely caused by the trauma of war. Then the movie's plot switches gears. A trio of tech nerds is convinced that the crash was no accident, and they seek out Marcus, who is only too willing to hunt down the supposed perpetrators. Writers of Justice then becomes two movies in one, a study in violent revenge blended with a story about nerds confronting reality, kind of like Death Wish meets Silicon Valley. The result feels more fantastical than anything else, almost as if the Disney studios had had a hand in the production. Yet it's nice to see the acting of such Danish stars as Mikkelsen, Nikolaj Lie Kaas, Nicholas Bro, and the lesser-known young actress Andrea Haik Gadeberg. And Jensen does address issues of morality while lodging a sense of irony firmly in his film's center.
Yeah, what a delightfully strange movie this is. Because if you look at the poster for Writers of Justice, I mean, look at the title, look at who's in it. It seems like it's going to be some kind of, and even when you read the logline, what the movie's about, it seems like it's going to be some kind of Liam Neeson-esque, Taken-style revenge thriller where a guy who's in the military gets revenge on his wife who was possibly killed in a foiled terrorist attack. And it is not that at all. At least it has threads of that. Mm-hmm. There are moments where it becomes that. But in between, you're right, it's this strange, bumbling buddy comedy. And Mads Mikkelsen is almost like the straight man here, mm-hmm. kind of reacting to all of the silliness that's going on. And even the fact that the statisticians, because basically the premise is that these statisticians come to Mikkelsen and say, the odds of this being an accident are almost impossible. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it had to be an attack and your wife was a victim. And do you want to come with us to seek vengeance? That whole thing.
To seek justice, actually. They're more interested in justice. He's interested in vengeance.
Well, they're interested in justice to almost prove that their work has validity.
Yes.
But even then, we see at the beginning them presenting these ridiculous studies that they've spent years of their time on. And it's just like, so they're sort of
typical academics.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're not incompetent by any means, but they're not competent. Let's just say that. And so that adds a level of unpredictability through a movie that is itself narratively unpredictable. And I also really love the thread that's going through here of this discussion of fate and coincidence, and can things just happen randomly, or does everything have to have some kind of mathematical purpose behind it? Are the odds that they're talking about here, do those apply to real life? And there are twists and turns in this movie that I did not expect, not only in terms of the bad guys they're going after, but in terms of what actually happened on the train that day. And then it all ends with it is almost like we talked about Black Widow, the first half of the show. There is almost this surrogate family kind of thing going on as they keep collecting other weird characters as the movie goes on and their group gets bigger and bigger. So, yeah, this is a really hard movie to describe. I think we both have had trouble describing the really unique and offbeat tone of this thing.
There
but it
is such
so
a
interesting.
Quirky ensemble of characters.
Yes.
And Nathan, as you point out, it expands because there's also this storyline, of course, going on between the father and daughter and their relationship and her longing for some sort of closeness in the absence of her mother. But then she has, you know, a boyfriend who's an intriguing character in and of himself.
And he's trying to show empathy towards the Mads Mikkelsen character, who basically comes at him with his fists.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that that relationship develops is
right.
Is
and
really
as you
interesting
point out, the denouement is fascinating. But yeah, to describe this film probably will not do it justice. Ha ha, writers of justice. And like you said, it does sort of turn the bad guys, good guys scenario, upends those notions. And we don't know exactly what happened, but it does show that despite all this work and the predictions that they made and so forth, there are still some random chances and happenings that occur in the world that can, you know, affect how things play out.
Yeah, which is the sense of irony that Jensen puts into his movie that I was addressing at the beginning. I think my favorite part of Writers of Justice, I love everybody who's involved with this, but my favorite part is the cover story that the three tech guys use to insert themselves in Mads Mikkelsen's family with his daughter, because they start to act out a scenario in which they are
psychologists
and like grief counselors.
That's right.
They're
dealing with their trauma by acting out what they really are doing, you know, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But you see the wonder in the girl's eyes and her boyfriend's, they're going, oh, yes, this really works. What? I have read the psychology.
And what's so funny about it, too, is the one statistician who is pretending to be the most competent of the counselors, the justification for it is like, well, he's seen hundreds of therapists himself, so he knows exactly what he's doing. And that kind of sort of cockeyed comedy is all the way through this movie, Writers of Justice, even though, and we should stress this, even though there are bursts of not graphic violence, but intense and somewhat realistic violence.
Yeah.
But there's also, as you said, this, I think fantastical might give people the wrong idea, but basically the kind of action you expect in any kind of blockbuster movie where, you know, a bunch of guys with guns pop off and then Mads Mikkelsen is able to just shoot them all one by one.
Right.
And obviously he has some kind of special ops training, so I guess it's somewhat believable. But
yes.
But within the framework of this movie, it does kind of come out of nowhere. And it keeps just yanking you back and forth, almost daring you to pigeonhole it into a genre.
But then he decides that he's going to train these other characters who are total couch potatoes.
Yes.
Train them how to shoot and so forth. And they obviously were not the fittest people on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they sit behind computers all day.
I think that anybody who watches any sort of Scandinavian noir or Danish film or television series will recognize various actors.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're...
Nicholas Breaux was in Braun. Nicholas Lea Kaas, he's worked before in Flickering Lights with Mads Mikkelsen. You know, these guys are all over the place, and they're really familiar characters.
And I think that we probably need someone, shout out to Pia Hallenberg, to bring us up to speed on how you correctly pronounce Mads Mikkelsen. We've been saying Mads for years and years, and now we discovered it's either Maz or Maz. So I'm going with Maz
with
for
a Z,
our purposes
with
today.
A Z sound. Well,
yes.
I want to talk about Mikkelsen. I'll just go with his last name. Because what a strange career this guy has had, at least in terms of the sorts of movies that we see here in the States. Because obviously he's been an actor for much longer in his native country, and then he sort of had a, you know, his switch over here was on Hannibal as the title character in Hannibal, and in Casino Royale as the guy who cried blood, one of the great Bond villains. I really appreciate that he can do a lot of stuff. He's done these kind of sobering dramas with people like Thomas Vinterberg, and then he can turn around and then he can do horror with Hannibal, and then he can turn around and be the sort of steady action everyman in this movie. But his version of action everyman has sort of a wounded human quality right beneath the surface.
Another round.
I just love the fact that both this and Another Round, which are coming so close on the heels of one another, are really playing around with the audience's sense of morality. Because as you said, Mary Pat, the idea of who's the good guy and who's the bad guy here keeps shifting because our understanding of what happened that day, what happened the day of the quote-unquote accident, keeps changing as well. And we keep having more and more questions. And by the end of the movie, we think, well, were they justified in anything that they did?
Correct.
Maybe they were.
But
maybe
if you
they
use
were.
Some sort of utilitarian calculus, maybe.
As the
know.
Characters in this movie would.
Yeah. Right.
And we need to point out that for a movie that is based upon statistics and statistical analysis, everything is set in motion by chance. A little girl wants a bicycle, a blue bicycle for Christmas. That sets everything in motion.
Right. It feels like maybe Run Lola Run or something like that, where random event, it's a domino
effect.
Someday
we're going to have to go back and review that movie because that is one of the great movies of the 90s.
But in the meantime, people should check out Riders of Justice.
And
it's
on
really
demand.
Good.
It's
really good.
And that was the Danish film Riders of Justice, which you can access through your streaming services. We saw it on Amazon Prime. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinman and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed the Marvel Studios offering Black Widow. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbert for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late, great Stan Lee. Marvel is a serendipitous feast for the mind, the eye, the imagination, a literate celebration of unbridled creativity, coupled with a touch of rebellion and an insolent desire to spit in the eye of the dragon. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.